Welcome to a Bicom podcast. I'm Richard Pater, the director of Bicom in Israel. This is actually our 100th episode, so I want to thank all our previous guests and also to all of our listeners. Thank you very much for staying with us and joining us. Today we're going to talk with ongoing developments on the political side here in Israel. Our first guest is Idan Rol from the Yesh Atid party. Of course, as many of you will know, the Yesh Atid and Telem split from Blue and White after refusing to join a government led by Netanyahu, but we will talk all about that in a moment. First of all, Idan, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
My pleasure, thank you.
If we could start, just to perhaps for those of our listeners who are not familiar with you, if you could introduce yourself and tell us how you entered politics.
Yes, of course. My name is Idan Rol. I'm 36 years old. I'm originally from the area of Jerusalem, but I've been living in Tel Aviv for, I don't know, like the past 15 years or so. I'm a professional lawyer. You know, I'm a certified lawyer, and I used to work as a lawyer in Israel's biggest law firm. It's called Mitar, and did mainly high tech and M&As, international M&As. Afterwards, I got into the high tech industry and worked in a couple of companies, both startups and, you know, big companies, worldwide companies, as a business development manager. And I guess in parallel, I always had, you know, the bug for like for civil action, for doing something that is, I guess, greater than like my everyday job or like gives me more meaning and more purpose. And I formed an organization called the Proud Front, which was the first of its kind to our organization for the LGBTQ community in Israel. And its goal was to, and still is, magnify the political power of like the political impact of the LGBTQ community. And from there, I got into Yesh Atid. I was elected for the 21st Knesset. I wasn't part of the 22nd, and now I'm back for the 23rd because it's been an eventful year here in Israel.
Of course. Well, welcome back to frontline politics. Before we talk about the kind of the hard politics, I just wanted to get your assessment on the corona crisis. From your encounters with the Israeli public, how do you assess their resilience and perseverance during the crisis?
You know, going into the corona, I had high hopes and high expectations from our people because I feel like, for better or for worse, Israel is a well-trained country when it comes to crisis and when it comes to very difficult and complex situations. So I did believe that we will manage it. And now, after, you know, being, you know, in all of that in the past 2 months, I feel like that was the right notion. I feel like the Israeli public is very disciplined and is willing to give the government everything it needs, basically, in order for her, you know, for it to resolve the crisis. With that said, the Israeli public is very informed and is very news enthusiast. And so I get the feeling that, you know, we got behind the government and helped them as a public right away, but we also need proper information and proper decision-making process. And you know, we're very observant, and so I feel like if the government is not gonna give more explanations and better rationalization for its acts, so the public might get more frustrated in the upcoming days.
How do you overall assess the government's handling of the crisis?
I would divide my answer into two parts. Initially, I thought they were doing quite well, and I refer to closing the airport and basically closing down the borders. We did that quite early, and we benefited a lot from it. But as time progresses, as time goes by, I get the feeling that we don't have enough information for decision-making process as complex as required in this corona crisis. I feel like going into the corona, we were careful and cautious. And now in some ways we got out too late, and in other ways we got most of the Israeli market out too fast altogether. I mean, it doesn't strike me like there's a plan that is based on valid information, both health-wise and finance-wise. I feel like it's a bit whimsical, and it's something to be concerned about.
If we can now talk about a little bit about kind of the politics and the coalition formation. Obviously, your party split with your partners and refused to sit in a coalition under Netanyahu. Do you not feel that you could have had more influence if you'd have gone in as part of this national emergency government?
Well, I actually feel the opposite, and I will tell you why. I feel like what we've been doing, and you can see all of us, you know, we've been passing bills to support, you know, handling the corona and to provide financial aid. And we've been doing everything needed and required in order to cope with this crisis. I actually see that there's no real purpose in getting into Netanyahu's government because of the corona. I don't see this government about to be formed as a crisis government, because so far most of its doing has been not related to corona at all. I feel like the Knesset is supposed to supervise and supposed to help legislate accordingly in order to help the people get what they need during this crisis. And I feel like we've been doing this. I think that Yair Lapid's initiative to freeze all political negotiations for 6 months was the best angle, because I'm always concerned about the corona crisis becoming political. Too many people have their lives, you know, hanging by a thread right now financially. And we need to make sure that every decision being made is the best decision possible, and that it is not conflicted or impartial because of political views. So I feel that is not the way to form a crisis government. We could have had a bi-party government that is a lot thinner, less waste of money, that is more attentive to what is required right now. And you know, you see blue and white, and it's like the Ministry of Health is out for grabs and no one is asking for it. And that's like the main ministry. The other main ministry is the finance ministry and the Ministry of Finance. And again, that was left for the Likud. And then you have the third one, which is also very critical, that is the Ministry of Education, and that also is not being called for by blue and white. So you know, it makes me second guess their motives, unfortunately.
We're speaking to you now. You're in the Knesset amid the voting to pass legislation to form this government. Could you give us a flavor of what it's like inside the Knesset today?
Well, things are very hectic. I would like to say something that is apart from my position in the Knesset. The rules that the government is trying to legislate, I mean, it's fine. They can form a government without us. They're entitled to, and they have the votes. But what I think my job here is to make sure that these bills that are drastically changing the democratic regime in Israel and changing everything we've known about how the Israeli democracy works. And also, they are unprecedented. You don't have anywhere in the world two prime ministers. So I think that's like such a massive change, and it's being done very haste, without like proper supervision and without the best legal people to advise and give their perspective. And that that concerns me. I feel like even when you do something that is that benefits a specific wing of the political, you know, spectrum here, you still need to think ahead and think, okay, will this get me into a bigger conflict down the road? Or am I also making the Israeli structure in politics more stable? And unfortunately, this is not making things stable. Just as a quick example, one of the main issues in this bill they're trying to pass is that it is possible for us in Israel not to have any prime minister. I mean, as the bill, as it is written right now, it is possible not to have not the primary prime minister and not the secondary one. And I think many would agree that not having any prime minister in Israel, that's an even bigger conflict than the one we've had the past year. So I wish they would have done it a bit more, you know, a bit more gradually and with some more preparation.
And how do you see kind of you as a party functioning as an effective opposition when there is little kind of unifying the other aspects of the people of the party outside the coalition?
You know, Yesh Atid has been around for a long time now, for 8 years or so, and we've always believed in certain values, and we stick by them. It's not always the easiest way; it's usually the hardest way. It's less, fruitful in the sense of like having governmental power. But I feel like right now, the fact that they all, you know, unify behind, you know, such drastic laws that can endanger the stability of our administration, we have an even bigger part to be here and make sure at least that the corrections, most required corrections, will be added, because I feel like we owe it to the Israeli public to stabilize our administration as fast as possible. The people have had enough. I feel like this government is not taking their best interest into consideration, but if it's gonna happen, we're gonna try and make sure that the people are taken care of as much as possible.
Can you tell us a little bit about your personal role in the Knesset, both in terms of the committees that you sit on and any other kind of pieces of legislation which are on your personal agenda?
As part of committees go, things are still temporary because everything is going to change once the government is formed. But I do, spend most of my time in the special committee that deals with these bills of forming the government. Because of my legal experience, which is exactly, you know, right up this alley, I feel like I'm most needed there. But in parallel, I have a lot of other financial initiatives. One of them is actually just a public service that is called The Day After the Corona, which is meant to, which is a series of Zoom sessions with the best experts in the job market in order to help people prepare and better address the day after the corona, where we're gonna have a lot of people looking for work. And also I have some new bills that I'm trying to promote that try to find ways for people who are left without financial aid from the government to tap into their savings in a moderate way that will allow them some oxygen financially to get them through this period of time.
And just one last question, if I can, taking on your legal expertise, what do you rate the chances of the Supreme Court disqualifying this government?
I personally think that the Supreme Court will not intervene in the main question of whether or not Netanyahu can form a government with all his legal problems. I do, however, think that there are some aspects of this arrangement of Kahol Lavan and of Blue and White and the Likud that the Supreme Court might intervene with. One of them is them asking to pass this law by 75 Knesset members. Actually, not to have 75 who will vote for it, but to make it immune for 75. And I feel that even more conservative parts of the Knesset know that this is a bad idea looking forward. Also, they have this allegedly a deal with Knesset members, Hauser and Hendel, that they will receive quite massive funding, 6 million shekels for the both of them, which involves changing the current law in retrospective, and also to make it completely personal, so it will only fit them. And I personally think that, regardless, that this is, you know, this is so out in touch, not you know, out of touch with this political and financial climate, when people don't have jobs and they need to get more money just because the current law doesn't suit them. But also, changing laws in retrospect damages the stability of this, you know, of our democracy, and we should refrain from doing that.
Thank you very much indeed. We really appreciate your insight on all that, and we will kind of keep watching it from near and far. But thank you today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
I'm now joined by Eli Chazan, the Likud's Foreign Affairs Director. Eli, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you.
We last spoke in February, a week or so before the elections, and you were pretty confident of the win. I'd say quietly confident, let's say. What's your assessment at the moment of the coalition agreement that's been signed between the Likud and Blue and White?
In fact, I cannot tell you because it depends on the Supreme Court, whether they will approve the coalition agreement or not. And I'm so sorry for this situation because it is impossible situation. I mean, the people have chosen, they elected Netanyahu and Gantz. Most of the Israeli society want a unity government. And nevertheless, we have to go to the Supreme Court. For me, we're about to lose democracy.
But do you think that the Supreme Court, there's a realistic chance that it will reject the agreement? Or just suggest some changes to it?
I hope they will not disqualify the agreement. I hope. And I hope they will let Netanyahu to go on as a prime minister according to the agreement, because I don't know how we will look like after this kind of decision. I guess that most likely we will go into a fourth election, that we don't want to go into a fourth election. It is a waste of money and no need. I guess that in that case, we will get more than 61 seats, and then we will change with no doubt the situation with the Supreme Court. We will bring more power to the Knesset as it used to be until 1995.
So if we just talk about the agreement for a moment, I mean, one of the criticisms we've heard is that such a huge cabinet, 32 ministers raising to 36 with a whole range of deputy ministers at a time when the country is facing really economic hardships. How do you defend that aspect of it?
I don't want to defend it. I'm against it. But on the other hand, we have no other choice but to go into an election. I want to remind to our listeners, Netanyahu is a free marketeer. He's against big governments. And that's, by the way, that's what he did in 1996. But he understood that in the end, politicians want more power. And then in his second government in 2009, at that time, he had 30 ministers in his cabinet because he understood, and I understood, people like me who hate, literally hate big governments, understood that it's much better to have a big government rather than to go into a not needed election.
But still, we're facing this enormous government. Do you think how do you think that sits with the Israeli public?
Most of the Israeli public is against it. But in the end, don't forget, and unfortunately, people don't remember this kind of thing. I mean, they have a lot of criticism when the government is starting to function, but in the end, it depends whether the government is good or not. And again, I can give you the example of 2009. In 2009, I was advisor to the Minister of Education. It was a cabinet of 30 ministers and 8 deputy ministers. And I remember the criticism against the government. But in 2013, after we did a lot of good things, still Netanyahu won the election with no reference to the big government.
And how concerned are you about kind of the criticism within the Likud that there won't be enough senior positions for enough of the senior Likud MKs? How seriously did you take that?
Yeah, in fact, that's the truth, that we have to give up over a lot of things in order to form at last a government, at least a government. We sacrificed a lot of things in order to do it. And I'm very happy that my friends from Likud in general accept it. And they were willing to sacrifice a lot of their, you know, private ambitions.
How do you, I mean, there seems to be one way that other parties kind of negotiate with the Likud and the Prime Minister, and then we see the reaction of the outgoing Health Minister Yaakov Litzman that seems to be able to demand the Ministry of Housing and Construction. How do you reconcile this with how the other parties are treated, that a minister is able to make such demands?
Well, in the end, don't forget, politics is a matter of power. I mean, I don't know if you wanted to mention Yamina as well. There is a lot of criticism from politicians in the right wing. How come we are 59 MKs on the right block and Benny Gantz bring only 15, 17 or 19 MKs and he's get equivalent numbers of ministers? In the end, that is the political situation. And I would say the same thing about Litzman. Litzman is head of a party of 7 seats. They were very loyal to Netanyahu, to Likud, to the right block, and moreover, he was very good in his position as Minister of Health, and according to his power in the cabinet, he knows what he's doing by demanding the Ministry of Housing.
And what do you think about Yamina? If in the end they will come into the coalition or not?
I have a lot of criticism against Yamina, I must tell you. But on the other hand, they are part of the bloc. They've been very loyal to Netanyahu. I wish they would stay as part of the bloc. Unfortunately, Netanyahu was, Netanyahu was offering them 2 ministries. One of them is the Ministry of Education. They are not willing to accept it, and they want to go to the opposition. Unfortunately, I wish they will be part of the coalition, because for me, the right bloc is very important. People from the right bloc, like Naftali Bennett and Eilat Shaked, and people from Yamina, they tend to forget that after the corona, after the unity government, we have more in common that we want to promote in the future. I mean, ideologically, we are more close to Yamina than to Gantz and to, of course, of Labour. And they must remember the day after the corona or the unity government. And I hope they would stay part of the coalition.
So one of the big issues that you're alluding to, it may even come up while we're still dealing with corona, that the accordance to the coalition agreement on July the 1st, the Prime Minister can bring up the annexation issue within parts of the West Bank. Obviously, this we also understand this will be done in coordination with the mapping team, which is the joint committee currently working between the US and the Israeli government. But what format do you expect the annexation to take? What do you think it will look like?
I don't know exactly, because there are too many versions of the annexation. I want to remind you about an historical example. Nobody knew exactly what Menachem Begin and Anwar al-Sadat is going to do after the peace agreement between Israel and Egypt. The formation was determined by both of them only after the third or the fourth meeting. I don't know exactly, but I hope to implement the Israeli law on Israelis and hope, on the other hand, that the Palestinian Authority will control Palestinians. I hope this kind of division will be on the land.
And how concerned are you about a response, a violent response on the ground, if and when any of this gets kind of presented formally?
Of course, I'm concerned. But let me tell you something. Every time we have an initiative, or a peace deal, or a deal between the Israelis and Palestinians, every time in the end of the process, you have violence from the Palestinians. It happens in 1937, it happens in 1947, and if you want, I'm not sure we have time to explain all the rest of the dates. The last time was in 2000. I'm concerned about it, but I hope to get over it.
How concerned are you about the recent statements from friendly international governments, including the UK and other Europeans, who have been warning against any unilateral steps?
I appreciate very much our friends in the world, mainly, of course, Boris Johnson and the British government. But with all due respect, as much as Britain take care of their British interests, we are taking care of our interests. We respect fully the declarations of the British and the Europeans, but I hope we will make this annexation eventually. We are waiting for that so many years. And let me tell you one more thing. On the other hand, Britain is dealing with Brexit, Britain is dealing with the corona, not to mention the European Union. I guess the attention will be less than we expect.
If I can just take us back to the politics, we heard just today the Attorney General coming out that he's unlikely to block the formation of the government, but we'll wait and see what the Supreme Court says next week. Just could you talk us through kind of the timeline of how once the court responds, presumably not blocking the formation of the government, how quickly do you think it could be it can be put together and sworn in?
Well, right now, what we are trying to do is to legislate, to bring all the legislation, and there is a lot of legislation regarding the rotation government or the unity government, as we call it. I assume that if everything will go as much as we expect, next Thursday or the Sunday after that, we will be able to form the government, and Netanyahu and Gantz will be sworn up together in the Knesset. If not Sunday, let's assume Monday. But again, it depends on the decision of the Supreme Court that will be most likely will be taken next Tuesday.
Thank you, Eli. It was great talking to you again. Most appreciated.
Thank you. Have a great day.